Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You may or you may not agree with things that are said, but if you keep that open mind, you will see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, it's an honor and pleasure to have Ed Roman on the show. He's an award-winning singer and songwriter, performer and multi-instrumentalist from Shelbourne, Ontario, Canada. Blurring the lines between pop, rock, folk, and country music genres, Ed's uniquely crafted songs have received regular rotation on more than 100 terrestrial radio stations across North America. Ed is a 2014 Artists Music Guild Award nominee and a 2014 Artists in Music Award nominee. I guess I said that twice. He's also a 2014 International Music and Entertainment Association Award winner and a two-time Indie Music Channel Award winner. He's performed at the Red Gorilla Music Fest during SXSW, the Millennium Music Conference, and SS Cape May. And he will be touring New York City, or he did tour New York City and Philly in July. Recently, Ed traveled to Jamaica to deliver much-needed humanitarian aid to the island while shooting the music video for Jamaica, and we are going to hear his song Jamaica tonight. His current album, Letters from High Latitudes, an homage to his Ontario home, is a critically acclaimed vehicle for Ed's socio-political, earthly conscious, and globally aware messages. This earthy, funky, and magical mix of music has earned Ed Roman airplay, chart recognition, and won over legions of fans around the world known as Edheads. And you can find him at World Wide Web, www.edroman.net, and Roman is spelled like the Romans from Rome. So without further ado, let me introduce Ed. And Ed, how are you tonight once again?
Oh, fine. Thank you, David. A pleasure to be here this evening.
It's great to have you. I have been looking forward to the show, looking forward to playing your music and finding out a little bit about how you came to follow the path that you followed in this life. And as a fellow musician, not a performer, but I am classically trained and I play the piano, I always have an affinity for people that have musical talent, and it's wonderful when somebody can make it and make it big, and I trust that you will as you go along your path. You're well on the way.
Oh, thank you, David. I appreciate that so much.
You're welcome.
Well, you're right. You know, it's wonderful to be on the show to talk about this kind of stuff, too, because aside from, you know, music and, as you're saying, being a performer, you know, it also means it's a business. And, you know, when you're making CDs and selling to people or merchandise or any of those kinds of things, you're very aware of that material aspect of it. And out of necessity, I mean, in order to pay bills and have a mortgage and all those other things that we sort of have to circumnavigate as human beings. But at the same time, the reason why I fell in love with music is because of that emotional and more so spiritual connection that so many people around me of influence as a young kid had. that were, whether it was my grandmother, my parents, brothers and sisters, older peer group people, it didn't matter who it was, but this sense that music meant more than just a commodity. Yes, we went and bought records, I'm dating myself, whatever it was, CDs, now it's MP3s, and still people selling CDs off stage and things like that, but what it meant to find that energy in the song, and when it became your own because of the recognition of the information, the way that the lyric moved you, or the music itself and the energy behind it, because you yourself are a classically trained musician, you know, in the complexity of a piece of music, that there can be a lot to commit to memory, or if you're reading something or whatever it is, but the emotional aspect of it is far more important sometimes than the actual the notes themselves, and even to quote Ellington, for that matter, to go even further, is it's the open space between those notes where that emotion and spirituality exist for the person that's playing it, as well as the person that's absorbing it. It's so intimately connected with those basic feelings that I even remember of smells as a child, because I grew up next to a creek, so like wild mint. And the music and the way that it made me feel was like, what is this? Even talking about it now, in thinking of songs even, that still, if I put on and listen to, still send chills up my back, because there's something more there, you know?
Well, you know, I find that chills up the back are a way that I'm really connected to Source, and I also, which I choose to call God, you know, whatever people, however they want to define it, be it nature, God, goddess, you name it. But I found, and it sounds like you've had this experience, at least with regard to what you were just mentioning, but I found that that's a way I can ask questions that I've been pondering in my heart and receive definitive answers. Yay. I get chills up my spine, and it doesn't make me feel cold. It's just a psychic chill or spiritual chill, whatever you want to call it. Have you experienced that otherwise?
Oh, absolutely. And it's the same thing, like even people that are, you know, physical mediums, or people that are in the paranormal realm of stuff that are attuned to those things, they themselves, what I call, and it's the same thing in music, have that chill-like experience. And it's not always out of the negative, but like you're saying, it's this cosmic rush of like, yes, this is the elation I feel from all of this summation of information and emotion that's been tumbling in my mortal coil for the last month. It comes out in this sort of spew or artistic yelp. And then the artisan has the ability to go, well, how do we chip away at this and mold this to make it, like, you know, understandable by more people, whether it's complex or whether it's simple, it doesn't matter. But that energy, because even simple music and complex music can still have that same energy flow. And I think that's where it's coming from. And even if, to me, like people say, well, where do you get an idea for a song? Lyrically, well, yeah, you know, you live life, you have those experiences, so you're thinking about things. But, man, David, there's been times where it's like, am I getting something from the Akashic Record here? Like, has it already been here? And that's when you get that feeling like, this stuff was supposed to be organized this way. And then you feel humbled, extremely humbled in the moment. And I've almost been brought into tears inside of the elation, because it's like, oh, well, this is happening. This is happening now.
Isn't that wonderful when that happens?
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's amazing. And you talk about the Akashic Records. I regress people. That's one of the gifts that I have. And, of course, you know, I do believe that we come again and again in so many different forms and varieties and permutations, whereby we choose to evolve spiritually. And history repeats itself unless we learn the lessons. But naturally, we're drawn to our passions and the bliss of our spirits. And, you know, once a musician, once again a musician you shall be. Not to say that you are in every life, but obviously not knowing when the seed was planted for you in this life, there's a calling that I'm hearing from you as you speak. When I hear you talk about that soul connection, if you will, between the notes, that sense chills up and down my spine. And the intimacy between the performer and the audience, I mean, that's a real soul connection there. And that is how we can experience God, if you will. And,
really makes it real for me, David, for as well.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt, but it's like, you know, I've played cover music before, and I've done it a lot. I've taught music for a long time, so I understand what the repetitious behavior of music can be. But at the same time, mm-hmm. when a piece of music really has that thing, that electricity mm-hmm. to it, it's very hard not to keep playing it or not to feel that same, like you said, that spiritual connection to its original source. That's even why it's important for me recording music, and this is something I've learned, like you're always learning, you're always going through stuff, that the method that I have is that there is no method other than that I have to capture the primary source and the rest will come. Once that happens, I know that there's even magic inside of the idea of like, well, wait a minute. You have an idea for a melody, so you're flipping through it. Da 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 da. You keep running it over. Ba 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 bang boom. Ba da 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 da. And all of a sudden, you go. It's like somebody's saying, "But listen, don't you see that it's supposed to go kind of here?" And then mm-hmm. you start following that, and you're like, "Oh, that's not it yet." And all of a sudden, when you start to realize it, you go, "That's what it's supposed to be. That's what." And that's another thing inside of my music where it's like people are saying, "Well, you're not just a country artist, you're not just a rock artist or a folk artist, or you don't write just jazz music." And that's because music to me, like you were just saying at the top of the show, that like with religions even for that matter, in their dogmatic practices, they reluctantly forget that it's all really the same thing. And that's
yeah.
the same thing with music, is that the prejudices exist there. And
right.
Mavis would talk about this, that, hey, look, he would go to Europe and people say, well, he's an American artist. They didn't say he was a jazz musician. And most people in the States say, well, Mingus, yeah, he was an amazing bass player, but compositionally, too. I mean, he was like Stravinsky, practically, with some of the stuff that he was writing. And so having that attitude means that you have that much more fluidity, an open palate, and you can cross-reference in so many ways. It's
mm-hmm.
like being able to, like, when somebody once said to me, if you go to a pond, and you throw a stone in one side, David does, and Ed throws the stone in the other, your stone is going to create a ripple, and my stone will create that ripple, a ripple. And eventually both of those ripples will meet and create a new ripple.
That's right. That's
and
right.
That's even the beauty of working with other musicians for that matter, because it was like, well, yeah, the arrangement's there, the melody, lyrical idea. Well, what do you think? Like, what's your feeling on it? How is it drawing you to it? And that's, for me too, playing with instinctual musicians is key. Because that they're thinking and feeling the same way.
Well, you know, I've participated in drumming circles, and I've been in choirs and so on and so forth, but there's something mystical about being in an ensemble, if you will, and when I was in a drumming circle, it was just amazing the intensity of feelings and emotions and the psychic chills and the spiritual connection I felt with the other people as the rhythm changed and as the beat intensified and all the permutations that could happen as we went along. And I would imagine that that's very much what it's like when you integrate an experience with other musicians.
Well, and that's really why, like, for me, too, playing jazz, and I studied it, and I still play it today, but
mm-hmm.
that has that life force in it because, oh, here's the structure. You can do whatever you want with it. And the head might occur at the beginning and the end, or there's a bridge or something in the middle, but improvisationally, it can go anywhere. Which means then, if you're playing in a trio or a quartet, you're listening in a completely different way, supporting an instrument that is soloing and looking for that same godlike vibe in the moment, in the structure, pushing the structure to new levels like it's elastic. And because of that, you're forced to listen a completely different way. And it's fueling you, and it becomes this symbiotic relation in the moment between what's happening. It's so organic and alive. It is like a living, breathing fire almost. And it's
well,
so
I've heard you. Yeah,
but,
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No, it's like it's so amazing to participate in.
Well, you used in the moment a few times, and I think that's a wonderful thing about music. When it captivates you and carries you, is you're totally present to whatever the experience is that you're having. And, you know, of course, to be totally awake and conscious, as many of us tend to sleepwalk through life or be consumed by the chitter-chatter in our brain, these extraneous thoughts that really mean nothing, that is where the magic is.
That's it. And we live in an ego-driven culture. The media perpetuates it. Commercialism perpetuates it. There's conditioning from the time that you're a young child, and most people don't even realize it. And because of that, those people that then allow themselves, maybe it's a midlife crisis, maybe they've been that way their whole life, maybe they've been studying it in order to understand more about it, to become it, to teach it, to whatever it might be. But you're right. If you're closed-minded and you have this, that's where, like, even an argument with people in a discussion, and if it becomes character assassination, immediately you know that you're not cognitively thinking about what are we discussing. Whether we're having an argument, we're diametrically opposed in our opinions about whatever it is, it doesn't matter. The point is that you're trying to figure out the path. And so often, whether it's politics, whether it's religion, whether it could be anything, even inside of music. Well, I don't listen to country music because it's blah, 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 blah. I don't listen to jazz music because blah, 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 blah. That means you're closed-minded. I can speak from experience as a young kid. I didn't get jazz music the first time I heard it. Some of my friends did, but then all of a sudden something clicked one day. I started hearing it. And not only that, not only hearing it, but listening to the artists that were writing this music talk. And this is the other thing, like in East Indian music, like Ravi Shankar and the whole connection to the Beatles and everything in its own right was a cool trip just because of the integration of two different cultures in that music and brought it to the Western Hemisphere. And Ravi is smart enough to know, cutting records, the first record he put out for the Western Hemisphere, he did a description through that album to talk about what a raga was, how you count it, all the before he actually played something. So there was at least this language and interpretation so that the listener knew what to expect. And it's the same thing in conversation and argument. So often people expect that this is what the argument's going to be, but that's what stalemates them in their argument, is that they're thinking too much about it. Even tonight before the interview, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to call David, and da-da-da-da, I got my coffee made. We're going to talk about spirituality and music and blah, blah, blah. But then I started to think, I'm not going to think about this. Because I know that the best things happen when you follow the path that is happening in the moment.
That's going with the flow.
And art, it's the same thing, writing and art. Art and music, whether it's music we're talking about, it can become contrived because it becomes formulaic. And that's usually what pushes people away from music that they don't totally get right away. They go, well, this is not the norm. It doesn't fit in the ratio of what I'm accustomed to. That's okay. Because if you spend more time with it, you'll understand it. It's like food. Food is the same way.
Well, it sounds to me like you think outside the box in a lot of ways, and in a sense you do with your music too, because you don't pigeonhole yourself into a particular niche. It sounds like you're constantly evolving and borrowing from different traditions, and however you're inspired, out comes your music. And people might want to try to put labels on it, but it's your music that's coming from pure inspiration. And what I'm wondering is, where does the inspiration come from for you? Do you do the lyrics first? Do you create the melodies first? How does that work?
You know, that's always the math behind what the music is. There, to me, you're right. I don't try to pigeonhole myself in anything just because something may have worked at one time. I've heard from people like, why don't you write a tune like that again? Da, 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 da. Well, that tune was already written.
Right.
So I'm looking for something new in the moment. Doesn't mean it's going to be better or worse, but I'm trying to express myself in the moment. And I guess that's where the ideas come from. Because if I'm pursued by an idea on a guitar, I'll follow it. All of a sudden, inside of that moment, something will start to show itself emotionally. The spirit of the music itself is saying to me, so often you just proclaim a small phrase or two words even, or a simple word in itself, and all of a sudden you go, well, here's the path. And you grab a pen, and you start scribbling, basic ideas, anything. Sometimes it's like pages of stuff that don't even make sense, but then you start to realize, well, here's the thread. And then a new grouping of lyrics comes out of the thread. So then to say, well, that's the method, that would be ludicrous, because sometimes a melody idea approaches me and I'll go, well, wait a minute, where is this going? Is this like a progressive number and is leading me. But lyrically and ideas, like you were saying before, we're so inundated with information every day, whether it's the television, the internet, our phones, it doesn't matter what it is. And it's always been kind of that way in newspapers in the past. People don't read the newspapers that often anymore, but
I don't. I don't even listen to those.
Me too. But the washing machine, your conscious washing machine, as well as your subconscious washing machine, is always turning. And I think at some point everything comes to like a figurehead and stuff. And
yeah.
I have a conversation with somebody at a grocery store, and all of a sudden I go, wait a minute, I've said this to 5 people in the last month. It's telling me that this is a catchphrase, and I'll scribble it down. And before you know it, it leads into ideas that come from that conversation at a grocery store. So to say, well, no, that could never be a song because I'm talking about carrots with somebody, that doesn't mean it can't turn into a tune.
Right.
I think the important thing is if you shut that off, you're shutting yourself off to more opportunity.
Well, I find the same thing happens to me with regard to my writing. You know, it's amazing where the inspirations may come from. And if I'm in the moment, they come from the most unexpected places, you know. And, you know, you talked about the grocery store. I had an interesting encounter with a woman who at one point I would have assumed was giving me a dirty look. I come out of the grocery store, go to my car, and there's this woman sitting there in her car, with her legs out of her car, glaring at me. And I said, hello. I said, how are you? You appear to be distressed. She said, I am. I'm a diabetic having a low. Well, we got into a conversation, and this woman turned out, and this is totally off subject, but it's just interesting about connections that we make in this life. This woman told me that she had developed something that's kicking the bejesus out of cancer when she was up in Canada, and that it's not being allowed into the United States for whatever reasons, which, of course, make me speculate as to whether or not there's some greed or what have you, control issues going on, who knows. But it's just, you know, picking up on the idea that chance encounters can inspire ideas, they can inspire connection. And, you know, I could have easily made a judgment that she was giving me a dirty look. I could have given her a dirty look back or whatever. But instead I reached out, and we need to do that in this life in various ways. And you're doing that with your music. You talked about the path, and that kind of is a segue to a song of yours that I'd like to play called Coming My Way. Are you ready for us to play that, Ed?
Yeah, man, for sure, David. I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Great. Here we go. This is Ed Roman singing Coming My Way.
Every day I've been waiting for the sunshine. It's been coming my way. And oh, it's been coming my been dancing at a hold down. Lost it to the fight with folk. I've been sipping on the moonshine. I've been telling dirty jokes. And oh, 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 it's a coming my way.
Coming my way. That was a mesmerizing beat. And of the title, did the title come first?
Yeah, they kept coming my way just over and over again, just playing that little pattern back and forth. Like, it was the night before a studio session, and I was just singing that over and over again. You know, you're cutting a record, and it's interesting, David. I'm about to embark on the same thing tomorrow morning, starting a new album, but you have all these anxieties, you're thinking about the tunes, and not anxieties like, you know, the tunes aren't ready or something. It's more like, okay, here we go. We're going into, you know, 10 to 13, maybe more numbers, 6 to 8 months of work, preparation, all that stuff, and all the business of it, and getting it done properly, and making sure it's captured on an energy level the right way. So that song was there in that same time frame. And, you know, I'm always saying to myself, what are the things that we're inundated with that we don't need? You know, in a materialistic culture, there's so much junk that we carry around. Don Henley once beautifully said, hey, man, the only thing that's different between, you know, me and you is that my pile of junk is bigger than your pile of junk.
There
and
you go.
Really, in the end, you know, I remember before my dad died, and he would say, look at, don't give the undertaker your money. Just build a pine box and put me in the ground. And those kinds of things, you know, kind of, you know, put the light into you as a young man, but at the same time also make you question all the things that we worry about. And that's where that song is coming from. And it, not only that, so many of those things deceive us from day to day that we lose our spectrum of conscious focus, because so often, you know, and we can't help it. I think it's greatly by design, and it's so many people are struggling, the economy the way that it is. It's very hard for people to organize their emotional thoughts other than what's happening immediately. The juice spilled, we have to get dinner ready, kids got to go to soccer, whatever it is. All of those kinds of things make it hard for people to perpetuate any kind of like mantra. And that's what that song is. I hope that when people listen to it, that they have that feeling for whatever is going on in their life.
I sure did. Well, you know, listening to your language, it's amazing. I'm very focused on language, which, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention to the words that come out of their mouth. I hear so many words that are spiritually connected, like light, presence, moment, conscious. What shapes your spiritual belief system? What gives you your raison d'etre beside music? What's the driving force behind Ed Roman?
Wow, that's a deep question, David. It's the heaviest question I've ever been asked. Yeah, you know, I grew up as a kid that was a Catholic, that, you know, my uncle was very attached to, you know, international business dealings and was what you would call, I guess, a Canadian mining tycoon. But at the same time, a very spiritual man in his practice as a Byzantine Catholic. And because of that, he went to Vatican II. He met the Pope. Pope John Paul II came to bless the church that he built where we grew up. It made it officially a basilica. But here's the thing. Inside of all that pious behavior, I still saw things that were incorrect, not with him, but in the things, the way that people treated each other.
Mm.
And at a very young age, even with my grandfather, he would, like, roll up his pant leg. I remember I was, like, 4, and he'd show me this bullet hole that was in his leg, and he'd say, "You see this?" Here's the thing. When you're a child, I go back, how much more sensitive empathy that I can remember having, that I could almost feel the pain looking at that wound running through my body. And he would look at me and say, "This is from a rich man's game." And he fought in the Austro-Hungarian War,
the
prisoner of war camp, you know, all this different kind of stuff, right? So his philosophies on life and how you lived it symbiotically, even my other grandfather, all of that made me start to look at life in a different way and start to go, wait a minute. Spiritually, these people that are claiming that they believe in God and they follow the Bible or the Ten Commandments, right, are easily the first people to pick up a gun or kill somebody. Or
that's
the problem that I have with the Marine Corps, that they, you know, God, Corps, and country, and I greatly respect people in the military for what they do and how they protect people. But ultimately,
right,
if you're hypocritical, and that's what bothers me as a human being, that's what drives me, is that seeing what the hypocrisy is and staying away from it, because I don't feel comfortable, my soul doesn't feel comfortable or relaxed when I'm living that way. Or I know people that I grew up with maybe that are business people now that are like, "Yeah, we just love screwing people for money." You know, what?
Yeah.
I can't live my life that way. And even it comes from my dad too, who you know, he people say, "Well, he's a politician." But my dad would never say he was a politician. He considered himself a public servant. So it's it's perception that drives my spirituality.
Well, that's amazing because, you know, we all have different perceptions. And when you talk about some of these perceptions or beliefs that people buy into that are really self-delusional experiences, it's no wonder why we go down these roads. It's no wonder why we get into conflict when egos lock against egos and people don't walk the talk of whatever religious or spiritual traditions they're following that all seem to contain the kernel of the golden rule. And you obviously are a righteous man who was well-disciplined, if you will, through the example of your father and grandfather. And wouldn't it be a wonderful world if we could all lock arms and just be at peace with one another? I mean, that's my vision.
And you know what? David, excuse me, you're totally right, because this is one of the things at this moment in time in our existence as human beings that elates me to the point of no return, and at the same time terrifies me because
I hear you.
Everybody is looking for the push button mentality version of the savior of whatever it is, their economic problem, their religious, social, political stuff. It doesn't matter what it is. This is what makes this moment in time dangerous. But at the same time, the realization is what needs to occur, because I think of Aboriginal people and where I grew up, because when my family first came here, they spent time with the Scugog Indians. And they, you know, their ideas are you have a seven-generation mentality. You can't expect to change things overnight. You have to live your life and try to impart that righteous behavior or knowledge or appreciation for what the simple beauty is that is around you. And all the rest will fall into place. And in generations in time, like trees or anything else, they become stronger. And we're becoming too dependent on what we were just talking about, those systems that we are like veneers that we hide behind. And we pretend that those things are what matter, when really in the end of everything, it doesn't. I mean, when we leave the box, we're not taking any of this with us. So to me, it has more to do with the experience in the moment that you're living than the end goal. It's like Paulo Coelho's book, The Alchemist. Yes, the goal he told him is at the pyramids. Doesn't matter, because the end of the journey is over. What has made it real is the journey and absorbing all that stuff, because in the end, that, like you're talking about reincarnation, I'm a believer in that, that there's something, you know how when you talk to, you meet somebody, even a kid, that's like 4 or 5. You go, that kid's an old soul. You just know.
Yeah.
You've got that little old lady or little old man mentality, asking questions, very astute, you know, very attentive. All of that makes me go, they're here on like a high-end cycle. You know, and some people are so floaty and fluid that even when you bring up something simplistic and they have this blank look on their face, you go, young soul. And for me, that's like a reckoning thing in my own mind, where I go, well, you know, I can't hold anybody accountable for that. They have to go through their own experiences.
Well, what I was going to say, and pardon the interruption, is all you have to do is look into somebody's eyes. And if they look away, chances are, of course, they're afraid. They're afraid to connect at an intimate level. And chances are they are a young soul, or else some that is so filled with fear for whatever reason, be it karma from another life or be it trauma from this life, that they have a challenge ahead of them to move forward and find their way to the light of which you were speaking earlier. And just to acknowledge, we do have callers on the line. We did have a couple of callers, and there's one that's been conscientiously hanging in there. And we will get to you in good time. I want to ask you, Ed, changing the subject, what were the seeds that were planted that germinated in your music, your interest in music, and when did that begin?
Well, first I'll say thanks for the compliment on language, because for me it was dyslexia. And having such difficulty academically because of it, you know, and my mom, God bless her, you know, they wanted to put me on Ritalin and all that kind of stuff. And this was back in 1975, 76.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, my mom spent hours with me going, practicing reading, using rulers line by line, flashcards so I pronounced things correctly. All of that stuff really pushed me into music. And my mom saw that, you know, what, the kid's a five-year-old and he's a ham. He loves singing songs in the kitchen into an old lamp when people come over. She got a hold of an old guitar from, like, the world-famous Knapsack Company. It was missing a bunch of strings. And when I got that thing, my whole life changed. It was like I felt so confident, and that, yes, I still had to struggle academically and maybe work twice or three times as hard as most people to achieve a B or a C-plus average. But for
me,
music was like, okay, well, boom. There you go. That's the gravitation for self-expression. But my mom always read to me, and we always spent a lot of time reading. So my vocabulary, I guess, was even higher maybe than some kids in school. If I remember being, you know, without sounding like I'm blowing smoke in my bum, but it's like the teacher would say, what does this word mean? And I'd see the whole class, you know, peripherally look at me waiting for me to tell you what the word meant. So, you know, language and music to me are intimately connected, and it's helped me allow me to express myself in a literary fashion.
Well, when I said who cares, I want to make sure that you understand where I'm coming from. I was talking about who cares about the grade, because it is the person's journey and coming to become true to themselves, no matter what the challenges are, that counts, in my opinion, and that's my belief, and I'll stick to it.
No, I agree, and being a teacher for as long as I have teaching music, you know, aside from working on what I do with kids from books or whatever they want to work on, I'm always trying to figure out what they're trying to say. Like, you know, I push them on that level more so than maybe some other teachers, because you have a curriculum or something that you're trying to follow. So by September to June, you've completed a book or two books or whatever it is that you're doing. But I'm trying to get them to express themselves and to be positive about it and to show me and to show other people, you know, what it is that you're working on. Even when I've been in Jamaica, I usually buy a guitar when I'm there and I teach kids, and I always say, you know, okay, I leave the guitar with one of the kids, and here's the deal: is you keep it, it's your guitar, and you, well, everything I showed you, you showed other people, and if other people can show you stuff, you learn from them, and everything you learn from them, you show to other people. So it becomes, again, that kinetic connection as to what, for me, music growing up was also that. It was like everywhere happening. People played music, and there was acoustic guitars and pianos, people jamming, and it seemed to be like, you know, everybody had a radio and a stereo playing all the time. So that's where that kind of, for me on that level, to teaching has also kept me open on a different level. Kids and the students that I've had for so many years have educated me in the process of teaching for so many years, learned to teach myself how to write guitar music, teach guitar music. All of that is connected to what it is, and I've grown so much because of it at the same time.
Well, you know, I've heard it said that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, but the question I ask is, who's the student and who's the teacher? And obviously, you are a person who learns from everybody that you encounter, and that comes from having an open mind and be willing to grow and evolve at all levels. And you spoke of Jamaica. I'd like to hear about the genesis of your song, Jamaica, but at the present moment, let's play it and then talk about it. And for anybody that's listening live that wants to talk with Ed Roman, please call in, and area code 239 gets to go first. So here is Ed Roman singing Jamaica.
hitting riffs. Dissecting our Babylon, sitting on top. I'm a homo Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Jimmy Cliff. Hold your hands and wave them high.
That was Ed Roman singing Jamaica, and boy, that song is fodder for some conversation, Ed, and I'm wondering if you're willing to run over the hour mark.
Sure, absolutely.
Great. Well, my husband happened to come into the room and listen to that song, and he hasn't been exposed to your music. He was a radio personality for 20 years, and he said, boy, I would play that music on my radio station.
Thank you.
He's a country music fan. He's been on the top 40, you know, beat, which, of course, to me is Dullesville, but that's beside the point. You know, everything in its own time for its own reason, and, of course, you know, my parents felt the same way about the music I listened to back in the day, but, you know, here we are today. We're dealing with what's coming our way. You know, it's all beautiful. I'd just like to ask you about your interest in Jamaica and how you came to that. And also, I want to explore briefly, although we could talk about this for a whole hour, the concept of walking the walk or walking the talk.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Jamaica, I mean, ever since I was a kid, 8 years old, and there was one of the live Bob Marley records that was at a cousin's house, and I remember people putting it on and listening and dancing and listening to it over and over again and talking about Jamaica and going to Jamaica, and, you know, it just seemed to be like, wow, who is this Bob Marley guy, right? And as I got a little older and in high school and stuff and started playing the bass a lot more, I was fortunate enough to have a friend whose sister was dating, he was like a road manager for Bob when he was here in North America, and had all these wonderful stories and his own personal record collection and pictures of Bob and all this stuff, and, you know, got into these like heavy philosophy sessions when we would jam at our buddy's house and stuff. So for me, it was like at some point I always would say, I'm going to make a pilgrimage there. And, you know, Bob had already passed at this point. But aside from the ganja-smoking Rasta man that he was known to be, and it was, the music and his lyrical content, the things that he wrote about and his perception of the system was very astute. And for me, listening to Bob's music in some cases is almost like an education. Away from the I Shot the Sheriff and the sort of cultural, you know, parable songs that are there, a tune like War, that was the Haile Selassie speech that he gave at the United Nations, which I'm not at all in favor of, and that's a whole other show and another topic.
Oh, yes, it is.
Or
yes,
Rat Race, or one of my favorite songs of all time, Small Axe. All of these sort of philosophical and spiritual connections to the self and the connection to your brother, no matter who they might be, all comes from that state of oppression that Jamaicans felt as being part of the slave trade, where all that
mm-hmm.
even comes from. And then hear it again, what Rasta culture is actually the amalgam of African and Indian culture that we're forced to, you know, pool together on that place and that island. But because of that and its history, and you know, between the Spanish and the British and the overtake and the war, the Civil War, and you know, everything else, that place to me when I got there felt like I had stepped at the figurehead of two telluric currents that were flowing underneath the ground. It was, I felt so like, okay, yes, okay, I'm saying you're on vacation, Ed, you know, you're going to hang out, you're going to be doing stuff with people, you're in paradise basically. But to me, there's something else that grounded me in a completely different way. Like, well, the first time we went, we stayed at a hotel, but we were hardly there because in a very short period of time, it was mostly the staff who played music or whatever, hanging out with them and going out and experiencing the island, really seeing what the island's about. And you start to understand that the place is impoverished. I mean, most Jamaicans, you know, have a great cell phone, but they may not have running water or a toilet, you know, and they're struggling to get food all the time or whatever it might be. And not only that, they're also working all the time. Like some of my friends that are there work from 5 in the morning till 6 and in the afternoon. They make in a fortnight, 2.5 weeks or whatever, but $130. And the cost of living there, you leave the resort and go shopping for food, and that's, you know, what we do. We hang out with people, eat, play music, you know. All of that makes you realize, my God, like, we have so much waste from where we come from. Even now when I go to, like, I'm on the road and I go to a men's room and I'll see somebody's, like, got the tap running, I get this, like, tight in the jaw feeling, like, dude, shut that off, man. You're not using it. Just because you're looking at your face in the mirror, shut the water off. So for me, it gave me, once again, that, like, I feel so privileged, and in some ways that's my whole part of my experience of writing the song. Or trying to give back, my wife and I, we send shipping barrels of stuff all the time, whether it's food, stuff for the kids that they need for school, pencils. And so many people go, look, how do I get involved with the organization? How do I send stuff? I'm like, all you need to do is leave the resort, make some friends, and you'll start to realize people need things. And it takes little to no of your time, a little bit of money on your part, because you got to pay for the shipping barrel and the shipping cost, but it's minimal in comparison to what other things are. And all of a sudden, all these kids and people have food, clothing, stuff for school. And I'm not doing it because I want some ticket at the end of the tax season so I can reclaim my money. I'm just doing it because I can. So for me, that's where all that comes from. And when, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk, that means that I'm there. I'm living it. I've cried with Jamaicans because of their circumstances. And I've bled there because I've fallen down, you know, and I've sweat there because I've toiled with people trying to help them, you know, do something. So for me, you know, it like I said, it's regrounded me once again as a human being. And it was hard. It was pretty hard for me not to do. As soon as I came home after my first trip, I mean, I got behind the drum kit and started playing like one drop beats, you know, and I was like, okay, here it comes, you know, and ride the ride.
Well, it's no good unless you pay it forward or pass it on. I mean, we are all blessed, but let's face it, in this life, there's a lot of seeming inequities, and that's just part of the cosmic drama. And we're here to help one another. I mean, my God, we could all be millionaires if it wasn't for greed.
Well, yeah, that's it. And like, even there with, like, the bingies that they have on Sunday nights, where the Rasta bingies were drumming, people come from all over the place, they'll do a dinner and they'll feed 100 elders that don't have food for the night. And, you know, they don't always have a place. That makes you go, okay, this is why aren't more people doing this here? And my wife and I even started to do that here. On some Sunday nights, we go, okay, we have enough extra food. We're going to open our spot at a table, and whoever is, you know, needs a meal tonight and they're alone and nowhere to go, our door's open from 6 until 8 o'clock, so come on by. All that changed. Not like I was like some money-grubbing person before that, but you get, like you said, so caught up in the material swoosh of everything, like between having to be somewhere at A to B time and then, you know, paying a bill or whatever. All of that changes when you start thinking that way. And it becomes like the community is looking after itself. And that's what makes me feel invigorated as a human. It's like, I feel safe. There are people like, don't leave the resort. I'm like, no. I feel safe because I know that's the way people... Yes, there's danger everywhere you go. You can get stabbed in Toronto. The
right.
point is that how do you want to live your life? Do you want to live
yeah.
in fear inside of the mechanisms of the system? Or do you want to free yourself from that and go and do it?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we're all meant to be free spirits. And unfortunately, so few people actually have that experience. And we do attach ourselves to outer conditions. And we try to make ourselves feel better through them and through the facades that we adopt, through all the labels that we attach to ourselves. And nothing's going to fill us up like being a real human being. And so I think we better go and take that call. And for anybody else who wants to talk to Ed Roman, this is your golden opportunity because the phone lines close at 8:30 Eastern Time. But you can get in here. We're going to go beyond the 8:30 mark. This is a scintillating conversation, and we're not going to end until it's over. So let's go to area code 239, who's been patiently waiting for 55 minutes and 44 seconds. Okay, I'm trying to bring you live. Hang in there, please. There you are. You're live. What is your name, please?
Hi, this is Diana in Southwest Florida.
There you go, Diana. One of these days I'm going to remember your number. Diana is also has been a guest on the show, Ed, and she is a spiritual being having a human experience who is having a spiritual experience. Welcome, Diana. Say hi to Ed.
Yeah. Hi, Ed.
Hi,
that's
Diana.
Great
nice
music.
To meet you. Oh, thank you.
That would be good in the tiki huts of Florida.
In the last 2 minutes, there's been three phrases that have been used, the tiki hut, then I think you said pass it on earlier, David, and you also said something iniquity. Those, to me, okay, I just played at Otto Shrunken Head, which is a tiki bar in New York. Then there's the connection to the two Bob Marley songs, well, one Bob Marley song, that's the small acts, to achieve iniquity, is the lyric line in it. And then the Bunny Wailer song from Bob Marley and the Wailers, which is Pass It On. So I don't know
well,
if you're intending,
no...
I'm looking for connections in the moment.
There you go. Like I said, there are no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. So, Diana, what do you want to say to Ed?
That's great. He's got his spiritual work in his music, and he is passing it forward, helping out the Jamaicans, and I'm sure he helps out people here in America too. It's just that kind of a spiritual person. I really like that song too, It's Coming, because it doesn't have the... I think that the ones that we try to do when we're a light worker and we just want to be there at that the right word, right agenda, you know, singing everything in this now moment all the time can be a pressure, because you might be singing it and believing it in full trust, love, and faith, and singing the same thing in a year and it's not here yet, and you wonder what you did wrong, blah, blah, blah. But if you just sing it like he does, it's coming. That's a knowing itself.
Isn't it amazing that you can hear it coming right from his soul?
Yeah, I can hear it, and it's relaxing. It's not... that upside, it's got to be right here, right now, because it's this now moment, because it's only this now moment. You know, we're trying to understand all of our concepts. It's more relaxing.
Well, that's the other thing, you guys, and I so greatly appreciate that, because to me, that's the other thing of being a studio musician and recording and running a little studio, is that, you know, music has become so quantized in a way that it misses its humanistic rough imperfect edges that make it so beautiful. That's one of the things that's the most difficult thing about being an artist, and at the same time the most simplistic, and I've said this before in other written interviews, is that we're all defined by the influences that we have and at the same time the limitations. But the hardest thing to be is yourself, and to feel confident in what you're doing. That doesn't mean that people don't have the confidence. And sometimes when they're overbearing in a performance situation, and you can kind of tell that this is like too much. It's like this is worked out, and there's all these dance moves, and it's cool. But I get more, you know, from watching Fred Astaire than just watching a whole bunch of dancers synchronized on a stage during a rock concert. I'm more about the energy transfer. To me, like, a concert is like an electric church where anything can happen. That's why even people like Hendrix, growing up as a young kid, the things that he did that blew people out of the water, not the lighting the guitar on fire, but, like, for instance, his version of the Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock.
Mm.
You know, people, he got a lot of criticism for playing it that way, in this, what they said, unorthodox fashion. And Dick Cavett show, Jimmy said, well, I thought it was beautiful. And the audience just started to applaud in his very calm and kind of cool kind of Jimmy way, right? And when you listen to that, it sounds like mayhem at certain points in time, but it's organized mayhem. When the Rockets' Red Glare part comes in, he starts doing the tritone going, na-na-na-na, like it's an ambulance. Like you can almost, he's trying to illustrate the warning at that moment in time. He's done something completely outside of the envelope, and that's what people have been conditioned to expect. That's why for me shows like the Idol shows and stuff, even the word itself, Idol, what is an idol? It's, you know, to me, stature is where that comes from. In time, if people develop those kinds of things because of ability or, you know, time has passed, they've recorded all this great music, that's when I start to have this reclamation for, like, well, who is this person? Not reclamation, but, like, understanding for it and going, like, okay, like for the longest time, Willie Nelson, I was like, when I was a kid, yeah, Willie. But now I look at Willie Nelson as this, like, iconic god for his abilities and what he's done. And he's stayed Willie, not just because he's a rebel, but also he's taken his inertia and used it in another positive fashion. Look what he did for farmers all over America.
Well, that's just the thing. I mean, we're talking about somebody that knows who they are and is true to themselves and is congruent with the talk that they talk. That's when they're walking the walk, and that's why I wanted to discuss that a little bit. And unfortunately, we lost Diana, and I believe that's because the show was set for an hour, and I didn't realize the studio would cut her off. I heard her.
Sorry, Diana.
Yeah, Diana, thank you for calling in tonight. You know, you're a blessing to the world. And I really like light workers who walk the talk, because there are a lot of people identifying themselves as light workers that still have a few shadows to chase away. And that's another show. But at any rate, Ed, I'm really enjoying this discussion. Do you want to talk for a few minutes more?
Sure, absolutely, David.
Okay, let's talk about that congruency thing.
Sure.
Because that's something that you Jamaica, and I think that it's something that we can all aspire to do, and yet is it so hard to walk the talk? I mean, knowledge is wonderful, but until you integrate it into your life and truly apply it and practice it, it's meaningless.
Well, you're completely 110% right, because aside from the experience being there, what I've been doing there, I'm trying to allow that to migrate into everything that I do in my life, because you're right. Even with some of the laws, because I farm, and I come from a multi-generation of people that have farmed. So for me, food and where food comes from and sharing it with people, saving food, learning to assist yourself, because nature has provided this beautiful bounty for you to be able to live with and give back to. So for me, my garden is like God, okay? So, and the same thing goes with, like, these new laws where you are not allowed to feed homeless people or give homeless people food.
I know.
Because of the laws and the bylaws and to me, it's like we all know it doesn't make sense. So instead of participate, just do it. I posted a thing on social media, 33 states or something like that had done this, in different towns across the U.S. And I'm like, who cares? Just do it. What are they going to? It's like driving 120 on the highway. What are they going to do? Stop everybody and give them a ticket?
Right.
They can't do it. They can't do it.
But it all comes down to personal responsibility, as I see it. And we are all responsible not only for ourselves but for helping our brothers. That's not to say that we want to help people who are going to take advantage. God helps those who help themselves. But, you know, I recently adopted something. You know, I drive by these street corners where people are holding their signs saying homeless veteran or whatever. And, of course, a lot of people would judge them, and I've done this too, is just a bum, somebody that's trying to make a buck. Are they really homeless? Blah, blah, blah. So what I've done is that now I have a can of soup, you know, and some juice and a napkin and a spoon, and they can eat the, you know, it's a nutritious, delicious soup that can be eaten hot or cold. And that way I'm passing something on and I don't have to worry about whether they're going to go out and blow it on booze and enable their alcoholism, if that's what they are, because to me alcoholism is just a symptom of a deeper distress.
Right.
But I feel like I am doing something for my fellow man, for the stranger on the street corner, not burying my head and ignoring those that are truly in need or maybe in need. And if they're not in need, maybe it will make them think twice. Who knows?
Well, and you're right. You know, that's the thing, too. Like, when we're on the road, we usually have, like, you know, the snack bag. But we always heft it full of extra protein bars and granola bars. Anytime we come across somebody that's out, we hand out food. Like, it's just like, well, you know, and my wife said at one point, I think we were in Philly or something, and she said to the guy, sorry, we don't have any money. And we were short on change and cash and stuff, and he said, that's okay. He says, I'll eat now, like, because we gave him some food, right? So just even having that cut. And the thing is like, for me, the realization of, once again, I'm using the word veneer, of the things that we think that are so stable and in place could never change. Everybody has the potential to be living in a home and paying their bills and doing any of those kinds of, and everybody has the potential to go from that to not having anything and being on the street.
That's right.
Once again, it comes to the realization of that, and having that realization makes you go, wait a minute, that's just a person. Like the tour in New York, you know, from walking from Central Park down to where we were in the Lower East Side, it was like we passed everybody from the fancy lady in the dress with the shoes walking with the poodle to an 80-year-old woman who's rummaging through cans, you know, to try to get extra change. And all of that seems to take place in front of itself, and at the same time, the people that are collecting cans are ignoring the wealthy, well-to-do lady or whatever, and vice versa. And what's odd is that they're both missing something valid out of that experience. I think more so the person that's you know, walking with their nose in the air is missing something from that street level of things. I guess that's,
I couldn't,
you know,
agree
the
more.
The privilege that I've had as a musician is that I've spent a lot of time in alleys and loading gear and talking to some pretty interesting people. And a couple people asked me a little while ago, like, what do you do before a show? You know, before you play a big show, are you nervous? And like, I don't really get nervous. I don't want to overthink the moment, because there's something, once again, that happens that's very special. So for me, if I find somebody that's just standing there, or what, I'll just start talking. Hey, how you doing? Whatever, blah, blah. Sometimes they'll talk back. Sometimes they won't. But I'm always trying to connect with people, because there's even something special happening in that moment. It may not be showing itself like, oh, yeah, I'm going to use that language on the stage when I get there because of that conversation. But something else. You're in that moment at that time. So instead of hiding in the club backstage somewhere, I'm out usually talking to people. So because all of a sudden, click, 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 there's all these little kinetic connections, and you go, oh, remember when we were in New York and I was talking to that cat on the street before? He said something, and it ends up being a lyric or something.
Oh.
Or it ends up being something that's like I end up using as a mantra for myself somehow.
Right.
You just never know. But I've had better conversations with people that are on the street than people that I've met in business conventions that I've been playing with.
Well, you open yourself to experience, Ed. And that's what anybody can do through connecting, because ultimately we're all one. We're all reflections of our higher power, if you will. I mean, that's my belief. Take it or leave it, folks. But it's something to consider, that we are not alone, that no man or woman is an island. And, you know, maybe we could just end up talking about blessing, because you used that word earlier about how blessed that you are. And so many people take for granted some of the most simple things, like their very breath or the fact that they may have a roof over their head, which, you know, most people in this country do. And instead they bemoan the fact that I'm not making enough money, I'm not happy with my spouse, blah, 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 blah. Complain, complain, complain. And I found that the key to the kingdom of abundance is gratitude. And I once asked a minister, she was an urban mystic minister, I asked her, what is the most important prayer that you can say? And she said, I think it is simply thank you. What do you think
you
about
know,
that?
That's beautiful, because, like I said before, like even when you're writing a piece of music, I'm humbled because of, yes, I may have worked for years on things at a dexterous level, went to school to study music, all of those things that created the Ed Roman hardware store that I can pick and choose from to create the cabinets I want to create. All of that aside, that when the experience happens, that I am humbled in the moment. I'm even humbled by, you know, I come in from the garden with a bunch of carrots and potatoes and a couple peppers. I've been, like, brought to tears because, and it's like people are like, you're crying over vegetables. It's not the vegetables, just the vegetables. It's the experience that I'm having, because it's not like this arbitrary act for me, where you're going to a grocery store and it's just there, you know, mommy, carrots come from the grocery store. No, man. They come from the earth, dark, good earth, that you can run your fingers through like it's like beautiful hair, and you can feel its life and presence in your hands, and knowing that that thing that you're pulling out of the ground is sustaining you. There's something religious about that for me. And that's, like, once again, coming from many generations of people that they felt that way about their animals, the things
yeah.
that they grew, their kids, and everything. So that, for me, that's where that humbled and gratitude-like experience comes from. That so often I cannot help but, you know, people at clubs that are working the bars or serving people at the end of the night, I'm always thanking people or. Because
yes.
it's like it's everything that happens that makes it what it is. Like you
That's
said
right.
before, we're all connected and everything. So how can you not feel that thing, that presence of like, my God, I'm so lucky.
Well, let's come full circle and end on the topic of passion, because obviously you found your passion and you find it in every aspect of your life, as I hear it. I hear passion in your voice as you talk about Jamaica, as you talk about the inequities of the world, as you talk about the rich, dark soil, as you talk about your music. What would you encourage people to do who are lost, who have humdrum jobs that they don't enjoy? What would you say to people like that, and there are many of them out there, God bless them, hope they find their way, what would you suggest they do in order to become alive, fully alive, to their spirits and to the concept of passion, and how would you encourage them to find it?
Grow your own soul. for me,
there you go.
My connection to the earth and all of those things, because even if it's 2 hours or an hour every day, David, the point is that you're like a child. You're nurturing it in some way. If you can think about everything in that way, and not that you always have to be worried about it, but you're, again, present of mind enough to pay attention to it, to participate in it. For me, I've known people in the last little while, even my cousin that was working in the industry, big companies and stuff, that she, and I was down playing in Austin, we hooked up. She's like, I left it. I didn't want to do that anymore. And now she's just got a small business where she helps artisans get their jewelry shops going, and she's connected to the festival circuit thing that's down there and thing. She loves that, but what it is that she sees her hands doing good things, you know, and it's not just placating the moment of the money exchange for the commodity. It's seeing somebody in a simplistic way grow, and that's what I mean. Her soul is that much more vibrant because of those experiences that she's, and seeing those people move on. It's the same thing I get when I'm a teacher, and I go, one of my students got accepted to Berklee College for bass playing in his master's in music, and I'm thinking, that's amazing. Like, I get a shiver when I think about that, because I had a hand in that, and it's him doing it, but I'm proud.
That's right.
And that's what it is. When you have that moment of pride, it amplifies and then punctuates, this is a good thing to do. In that simplistic way. So that's what I mean. You're growing your own soul. If you have a lawn, get rid of it. Just start planting peppers and tomatoes, or just a whole bunch of lettuce. And not only just to do it to eat it, but you could sell some of it and make extra money. You could give some to your neighbor that might need it. You could freak people out because all of a sudden they're walking down the road and they just see a whole bunch of cabbage on the front lawn. that makes you feel alive. And eccentric behavior also makes you feel good. It makes you feel happy. Yes, I might be coddling this carrot like a child, but I don't care. It's making me feel good.
Well, who cares? Absolutely.
Right.
And you know, you talk about children. I mean, my God, it's in the Bible. For those of the people who read the Bible, make yourselves like little children to enter the kingdom of heaven. And I believe the kingdom of heaven is the moment. It's the eternal now. And you've used the word moment at least a dozen or more times, probably two dozen times. And that is, don't carpe diem the day, don't seize the day, seize the moment and be fully alive.
Right. And just being aware of it, you know, like people say, well, I can't garden. Well, why? Well, I've never done it before. But then
that's right.
The worst excuse I've ever heard in my life.
You need to think outside the box.
My mom took me out there and she said, okay, we're going to plant some carrots today. Okay, how do you do that, Mom? Okay, half inch deep, make the row like this, dig up the soil, we're going to put a little manure. You know, you learn, and paying attention to it. And you know what happens inside? It's not just like, oh, now I know how to grow carrots. You're training your mind. It's not just luminosity that feels like games. You're training your mind to behave differently. That's more conscious, so that migrates to other things that you do in your life. It can't help but not.
Let me ask you a question. Talking about the mind, do you believe that we have the power to choose our own thoughts?
Yes and no.
I've
seen and experienced some things in technology that make me question why those things are the way that they are. And that's a whole topic for another show. But
I want you on the show again.
Sure.
Because we have a lot of meat.
The conditioning of television, David, in that most simplistic fashion. Kids, for instance, I'll say, think of this. When a child receives a toy, we're right immediately conditioned from the time you're a boy or a girl for that particular kind of toy. Not only that, you're conditioned by those colors. Those colors are frequencies. Those frequencies make you respond emotionally to certain things. So a boy will most readily be getting a yellow truck, a red fire engine, a blue something, okay? Those colors are then associated in the adolescent world with fast food. That are this high speed, fast, McDonald's, da-da-da-da-da, yellow, red, da-da-da, whatever it is, pizza. They're all those things. When they're of that next consumer species generation level in their adult, early adulthood, that's when you'll find all the alcohols and tobaccos and everything else that are related to those colors. And even people in fast foods, they bet on that. So people go, oh, yeah, I want something fast. I'm going in here. Look at the red sign. It dictates speed. That's even why a fine dining restaurant will paint beiges and, you know, light tones, nice music playing, plants, you know, and it prolongs that experience because those color frequencies are also helping dictate that elapsed time feeling. So, yes, I, in some cases, I don't think people are conscious of their own decisions. Even when they make bad decisions, you can tell people, hey, man, that's full of sodium fluoride. Why are you eating that? Why are you eating that? Why are you putting that in your mouth? Have you not read the statistics? You're crazy for thinking that. Well, why? Why does the label say do not allow this person to swallow this, call a physician, do not allow a child to use this unsupervised under the age of 12? Why does it say that? Why do I, if I go to the hardware store and go to rat poison, it says sodium fluoride? Why did they put sodium fluoride in the water source of the gulag during the, why is the, why? You can bring all those points up and people will still go ahead and use that material despite it's hurting them. So, yes, they're not consciously thinking about it because of their conditioning. And some people, they break away from what those things are and they're either a heretic or they're a conspiracy theorist or whatever it might be. But really all it is they're just, they're living their life by choice as opposed to by what's been dictated. You know, and that's,
That is a key word, choice, because we always have the right to change our minds. We have a choice each step of the way. And the reason I asked the question about whether or not you believe we can control our thoughts is it comes back to the concept of being present, aware, conscious, whatever you want to call it. It's said that we only use, 10% of our brain power? Can you imagine if we were conscious to every moment how aware we would be, how present we would be, how much we would be able to just channel our energy and our thoughts in a positive direction, raising our vibrational level, connecting with others, sharing the experience, sharing the wealth, and so on and so forth.
I know, and this is the thing with music. Aside from it being, like we were saying, the commodity factor, being a teacher, or as long as I have teaching, it's so important to have music in early development of the brain because hemispherically, your body works together to play an instrument. The left and the right, the male and the feminine, working symbiotically to create the rhythmical aspect, the melodic aspect, the feeling that then runs through the entire human being. That and not having that present on a regular basis is not healthy for brain development. So then you end up with either a heavy patriarchal system, or you either end up with a heavy matriarchal aspect of it, pushed to either side. That then creates a social divide, even in the way two people react to one another. Man to man, woman to woman, woman to man, woman, it doesn't matter what it is. But not having that, you don't have that connection to yourself. You, even as a pianist, you said you're a piano player, right, classically trained?
Yes, that's right.
The left and right concept. You know that there's chordal stuff coming from your left side. You know that there's melodic stuff coming, and sometimes vice versa, or sometimes together. They're working in unison. It's the same thing with playing a stringed instrument. It's coming from melodies coming from the left, and rhythmically you're getting stuff coming from the right, but unless you're flipped on as a string player, but most of the time. That is the connection between those two parts. There was a book that was written years ago. I've been looking for it for 20 years. And it's called The De-Evolving Human. And it was a book talking about how the brain actually was one hemisphere. And that's when we had abilities beyond abilities as far as development and evolution. And I'm talking 12,500, 14,000 years ago, long before anything that we have today. Through this manifestation of continual separation of the brain, it's created a hemispherical divide. And it was a fascinating thing. And I remember I was at school and people were talking about this book and music philosophy and stuff. And I was like, I got to find this book. And I've never found it. But when you think about it in that regard, if you have an undeveloped either or, then of course it's going to be heavy set to one way. And you're going to have those attitudes and opinions that aren't healthy.
Well, I'll tell you, we could go on, and I want to do it again. Practical question, when do you think your next album will be out?
I'm aiming for the spring of 2016. So tomorrow I start on bed tracking a lot of stuff. And that means the primary source, whether it was the bass and the voice, a drum kit, guitar and voice, two guitars, I'm starting all of that. And all through the fall, that process will keep evolving. Come Christmas time, the album will go into mixing and mastering. And once that's done, post-Christmas and the rush with everything else that goes on, for me, spring represents that time frame on a paganistic level, I guess, of planting seeds. And the last record I did, you know, I did around the same time. It was a spring release. So for me, it's representative of growth, and it's something I try to follow.
Well, there we are, back in the rich harvest of the earth, of the mind of Ed Roman and David Clark, planting those seeds. We planted a lot of them tonight, and I thank you so much. I'm going to get in touch with you the end of 2015 and book you, because I book months in advance, and it's just pure serendipity I was able to get you in so early.
Awesome,
but I thank you so much for your contribution to the show tonight. We've given people a lot of food for thought. And for those of you who are lucky enough to be listening to this on the podcast, you're hearing the whole enchilada. And so, Ed, thank you so much.
My pleasure, David. Anytime, my friend.
Okay. Well, God bless. And so once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions, the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we allow it to be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.
Every Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and Friday on blogtalkradio.com. Good night, and thanks, Ed.